This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, final hour of our week. Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com as well. This hour brought to you by Tackle, T-A-K-L. Brock, we promised something weird, something different, something unique for this final hour here of our week. And we are delivering, sitting just to my right, in for the entire hour. The Woo! Famed. You know him. I think love him. I think you know him. Maybe you don't even know him. Roger in Tacoma is in with us for
the
whole hour. What's up, dude?
How you doing?
We're good.
Why has it got to be weird and unique when Roger's in? Why you got to call him weird? Why you got to call a guest weird and unique? You never called a guest that before. Poor Roger's come all the way up from T-Town. And he's got to look at this big board right here, Mike. Yeah. You ready for this? He's got to see himself.
He's got to see that he's not number one. Yeah, we're going to make you stare at this thing.
This is a straight PowerPoint.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Roger's number two on our big board. Top five callers. If you're wondering what that board looks like right now, Kendall is in first place in Santa Monica, partly due to quality, partly due to quantity.
Yeah.
Roger hanging tough at number two. Ricky in Seattle is number three.
Yep.
Brian in Tacoma is number four, but he's super mad. He said he's never calling the show again.
So he's done with one of them. He may not even be listening.
Right, that's too bad. And then Adam in San Ramon, California is fifth. Feel bad about Brian. He called in and we were just sort of making fun of him and all the stats that he was dropping. He got very upset.
Yes.
Said that he'd never call the show again.
Tweeted, you just lost a listener.
Guy called me an angry little elf, said that I was dark, despondent, and depressed. And then when we made fun back, he quit, took his ball, and went home. You wuss.
You nervous right now, Raj?
Oh, just a little bit, but that's all right. It's all good. It's all good.
Why would it be any more nerve-wracking to be here than to be on the phone?
Well, not really, but, you know, I'm sitting across from the man.
All the trappings of the office here.
We got the microphone right in front of me. We got computers in front of me. We got Brock. I'm staring right at Brock.
It's so like the way they have the Oval Office designed to try to intimidate you.
Yep.
Like,
absolutely.
That's the way we've designed this studio.
This is the second time I've been here.
True. So that's true. Brock wasn't here the last time.
He wasn't there. Oh, I meant to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Actually, I meant to ask Kyle a question.
Okay. You know,
Brock wasn't in the studio. And so I was wondering about what Brock's reaction was when he found out that Roger from Tacoma is a black man.
Yeah, what was your reaction when you found that out?
I knew it. I'm really good when people are on the other end of the line. I nail it like 9 out of 10 times, man. I got it totally. Oh, is that your phone off?
That's rookie move right there.
Move
Roger.
Him down the list. Move him down
the
list.
You ready to go down on this
list? No.
Brock is now just dodging the question.
He is dodging.
Roger, you ready to do some up-downs?
I'm ready
to can't have that
down.
Phone go off again.
It's gone.
I wonder what the reaction is of like 100% of our listeners right now as they're hearing that.
Well, all I'm saying is you would have been proud of Mike because, you know, Howdy comes, gets me in the back room. He brings me back here, and Mike looks. On the outside, Mike's saying, hey, this is Roger from Tacoma. On the inside, he's saying, what the hell, Roger's black?
How do you know that? I always assumed. All right,
listen, I take no offense to it. You know, when I was just a boy, I developed this heavy, heavy Caucasian accent, and it just kind of stuck, so I'm just deciding to ride with it.
I think, who was it, Justin Wilcox? Is that the one that got you the
most? That was just the name.
Right. You're like, what?
When I saw a picture of Justin Wilcox, I was blown away by that. The guy's white. Never dawned on me that Justin Wilcox would be white. I don't know. It's just my assumption.
Well, welcome in.
Sometimes we make assumptions. All right, Roger, let's talk some football with you. It's one of the reasons we wanted you to come by and kind of hang out with us a little bit. Although people do want to know, Brock, what's your analysis of Roger's body? All right, we'll talk about that and answer the question, jerk. I promise. We'll do a full cured body show on Roger. We started off today asking this question around 7:30. I'm kind of curious your answer. What would you rather have the Seahawks do? I stole this from Hawk Blogger over who had this out last night. If they're not going to win 11 plus games, which obviously would be the ideal, would you rather have them be bad, win 3 to 6 games, get into full rebuild mode, get a good draft pick, etc.? Or would you rather have them sort of in the middle, 7 to 9 wins, competing for the playoffs? Maybe they get in, maybe they don't. What would you rather have them do?
You know, I was very Seahawks 2.0 started with the draft, and I wasn't excited until they started the draft of people that I really liked. So I think that they're going to make probably that middle move where they're probably around 8-8. I think they're going to perform better. I don't really think there's a huge advantage of having that high draft pick as opposed to having a team that is young that is developing.
Yes. Yeah, we were chatting during break after that segment. I was trying to think of a team, and maybe, Roger, you can help alongside, where you had a franchise quarterback. And Russell is a franchise quarterback, in my opinion. I think we all share that opinion. Franchise quarterback that had to, like, tear things down, win 3, 4, 5 games, and do it through the draft and build back supposedly up through the draft. The Cleveland is still trying to build back up through the draft because all those teams that have to build that way have to get their quarterback. You got your quarterback.
You got your quarterback.
If this team wins 3 to 6 games, we got a problem, in my opinion. We got a problem. I don't think they are. Unless Russell gets hurt, I don't think this team's winning between 3 and 6. I think it's more than that anyway. So the question becomes a little mute. But if Russell starts every game and they win 3 to 6, we got issues.
Yeah,
real issues.
I think they had a really good draft, and we're probably in this capsule of denial up here because it seems like everyone outside the Pacific Northwest thinks we had a horrible draft.
Yep.
But I loved it, and I think that the players are going to come right in. I think that it actually started last year with Shaq, with Postich, with Nas. I think that's going to be the reset.
Here's the thing. Last year they started – who was talking about this yesterday? I think it was Bob Gross and Tom were talking about this yesterday. They started this process a year ago. They started planning for the turn a year ago. They didn't – you know who it was? It was Brady Henderson, who was on with Bob Gross and Tom, and Brady did a great job saying, look – they drafted a safety in the 3rd round, a safety in the 4th round. They hadn't done that in forever. They took 2 guys in fairly, for them, 3rd and 4th round are significant picks for the Seattle Seahawks. They drafted 2 guys that they must have thought could be more than backups if they were going to take them in the 3rd or 4th round, which meant they were planning for the eventual turnover at the safety position. Now, I don't think they thought it was going to be both Earl and Cam, but I think they were getting ready for it to be at least one of those guys, and Delano and Tedrick could play and see which one ended up getting onto the field first. The other you'd pair with Bradley McDougal or pair with either Cam or Earl if that guy was still around. And so I think I understand what you're saying. They've prepared for this now for the last few years. Here's the problem. I'm not sure that you can count on rookies to do that. We tried that a few years ago.
Yeah.
We tried that the year of CJ Procise and the rest of those guys and Nick Vinette. These guys are going to come right in and they're going to play right away and Procise is going to do this and Vinette's going to do that. And the fact of the matter was you just can't do that with rookies. It takes them time. And if you're in a position where you're counting on them to win now, you're probably in bad shape.
Yeah, for sure. And the thing about it is that I think that, sorry about that.
No, go ahead.
It's a lot tougher in the studio.
it's harder when you got to keep going for more than 2 minutes.
It's a lot tougher, Roger. There's an appreciation you're gaining.
I am gaining the appreciation big time.
I'm sitting in my home. I'm comfortable. I got my one little thought, and all of a sudden, this game's speeding up in the studio a little bit.
Just a little bit.
But you're still my number two guy.
You're
still my number two guy. Are you buying, though? Are you buying that this team can still be viable this season? Is it hard when you're hearing the Jason Lock and Forrest say 4 wins? When USA Today says 4 wins? When most of the pundits are saying the over-under is 8 and maybe betting? Do you find that, that stuff's like out of left field crazy? Or could this team have a little more of a reset?
It's going to have more of a reset. And I'm sorry.
No worry about it. You're all good. You're with family right here, Rod.
I don't know what's happened.
It's what happened with Clayton. Clayton got a little dry mouth. Yeah. And you got a little rule. Do you need more water? Hey, big Kyle.
No.
You're good? All right.
Go help the poor man. Huh? He's struggling over here. We'll jump in and help you out for a couple of minutes, Roger, and talk about identity. The reason that I think you're excited is identity. Why did you like the Seahawks draft this year? I don't think it's because of the specific players they drafted, because let's face it, we don't have any idea whether they're going to be good. I don't know. And the biggest example of this is Will Dissly. I have no idea if Will Dissly is going to be a good NFL player. Neither do you. I don't think John Schneider knows. Brock, I know you don't know. We don't know whether Will Dissly is going to be a good NFL player. I don't know if he's going to be a starter. I don't know if he's going to be a backup. I don't know if he's going to play his way out of this league in a couple of years. Was he a 4th-round pick? I'm not even 100% sure he makes the team this year, although I think he probably does.
Yep.
Will Dissly represents the Seahawks doing what they say they want to do. And before you can judge players, you can judge priorities. The Seahawks are in the process right now of changing their priorities back to where they used to be. I love the Will Disley pick. And I say that with absolutely no idea whether or not he's going to be a good NFL player. Because who can know?
Well,
I watched the guy play a few college games. I liked him. I'm hoping he's going to be a good NFL player. What I like about the Will Disley pick isn't his specific measurables.
Yep.
It isn't the way he scores on the spark reading.
It isn't his nicknames.
It's Billy not Bozeman, even his nicknames or his personality or anything. I like what it says to their identity. We want a tight end who can block instead of one who's 6'10" and can't. That's a major change.
And if I remember right, I think it was Roger that wanted that guard, right? I think that's where all of this started years and years ago, was that belief. And it was the position, but Roger, it was more than that.
Yep.
You wanted a guy that could just maul people. Right, wanted a guy that could get after it.
Can we just draft a guard?
There it is.
I mean, someone who's played guard all of his life, someone who wants to go to the Pro Bowl as a guard, not a go-between, not a hybrid, not a switchover, not a defensive lineman, a guard. I just want a draft, a high-level guard.
Who was that guy right there calling in?
That was your boy.
That's exactly right.
So here's the deal. So when the Seahawks won the Super Bowl, the player that they lost the following year that they never replaced was Zach Miller. The dude would block his butt off.
Yep.
You know, and when they just, Mike, you said this many times, when they signed Jimmy Graham, they sold a part of their soul.
Did you know that at the time?
Did not.
Neither did I.
Everyone was excited about it for the obvious reasons. Big target, big hands. But they lost so much of their identity with that because they thought if they could bring him into this culture, he would learn to block. He would want to block. Didn't happen, you know, and so signing Ed Dixon and drafting Will Disley was their way of saying we're going to get back to who we are.
But you can't point to Ed Dixon and Will Disley and say, oh, this team is going to be good now, and that's why you can see USA Today say they're going to be 4-12. National pundits are probably not all going to say that, but they're going to say 7-9. There'll be a continued regression. Russell will win them a bunch of games. I mean, the only way you see them winning four is if you just don't think Russell Wilson's a good player. And there's some people out there who think that they're wrong. But if you're just not a Russell Wilson person, you might pick them to finish near the bottom of the league. If you are, but you're just not going to, who can look at a team and say, I'll tell you what, man. They signed Ed Dixon. They drafted a fourth-round tight end out of UW. That's not the way football teams are measured. You look instead at all the big names that they lost.
Sure.
You look at the lack of big names that they replaced them with. You look at the fact that pass rush is a major, major concern, that they have a giant problem hanging over them with Earl Thomas, who is hanging out, and the potential pitfalls it creates in the locker room. And here's the last thing, and this is going to happen. You have Richard Sherman down in San Francisco squawking in everybody's ear, trying to break this team up behind the scenes, and I will bet cash money on the fact that there will be an article that comes out between now and September, what day is the first day of the season, September 7th? Between now and then, where Richard Sherman will not be necessarily quoted, but he'll be the source behind it, Sports Illustrated, USA Today, ESPN the magazine, I don't know where it's coming from. It'll be one of them.
Yeah.
And it will be all about what a terrible leader Russell Wilson is and how everything is and how everything is just he's not capable of leading this team into the future. And all of these things are hanging over the Seahawks, and it's all coming together in this one season.
Yeah, and the beauty is, I think for you, Mike, and this has been the pedestal that you've sat on while you've enjoyed Roger so much through the years, why your phone calls are always so welcome, Roger, when you do call, why you got in the seat today.
Absolutely.
Because you've added to our show so much because you're equally like-minded. This team has got to get back to running the football. This is Bob Gross and Tom talking, as Bob usually does. He talks about offensive line and everything else. And you go back to that 2013 Super Bowl, you point to Zach Miller. You know what James Carpenter was? He was a mauler. He moved people. Brandon Giacomini, he just moved people. That group up front just manhandled and moved people.
All right, so let's dig into a few of these issues. Roger, what do you do with Earl Thomas?
Ooh.
You know, I am absolutely split, depending which day you ask me. And because if they resign him, their dip is going to be less. Instead of going down to 4 wins or 3 wins, they're going to hang at 7 wins. The difference between having Earl Thomas in the middle with inexperienced corners like Shaq is huge, you know. And so, but if they don't sign him, you know, there's an attitude thing that they're trying to get rid of. And
so, Roger, you're in the appraisal business.
Yes.
When people come to you and say, my house is worth X, and you say your home is worth Y, do you succumb to their emotional desires?
No.
No, you don't.
No, you don't.
You do not want Pete and John to succumb to Earl's wishes of you're going to make me the highest paid safety in the game. Right? They have said we are going to separate the business and emotions, which they have done for years and years and years. This is our number. You're going to play the number at 8.5 this year. And they are not about, if they are not in the business of re-signing him long-term, why are you wishy-washy on this?
Well, I mean, they need to extend him or they need to just let
play
him.
It out.
They got to play it out.
You know why he's wishy-washy on this? Because it's hard to admit, it's hard to not want to do everything to help right now. For the same reason you get, even though your brain can tell you Jimmy Graham is a bad choice for their identity, how can you get mad when one of the better players in the NFL shows up on your team? Even though it was bad for business, long term, how could you possibly look at acquiring Jimmy Graham and say, eh, bad move? And the problem is sort of the opposite with Earl Thomas. You know that it's not in the Seahawks' best interest to sign him. The appraiser in you, Roger, knows that's not the right thing to do. But how can you sit there and say, yeah, I don't want Earl Thomas around anymore? He's a good player, and you're willingly moving him off of your team.
Yeah, he gives them that veteran presence right in the middle of the field. But yeah, if his attitude's not going to be right, yep. if he's going to keep squawking in social media, then they're going to have to find a way to get rid of him.
Well, we're 7 days away.
Well done, Roger. It's an honor to follow him, actually.
Wow. See, people love
my one fan.
There you go. That person's really excited.
You got more. You got Coach Carroll. It was Coach Carroll that mentioned you by name as well when Reese Odhiambo that was drafted.
Reese, what's going on, buddy?
Yeah, how's it going?
Hey, man, there's a guy that's been calling in the radio show around here. He says, can't the Seahawks just take a guard? Hey, well, you're going to be playing guard for us, okay?
Man. They moved him from tackle.
They did. They still haven't drafted a guard.
And he's still playing tackle.
They still haven't drafted a guard.
The poor guy had to have surgery on like 12 fingers. He was true. Like, oh, Reese is out. His fingers are just pointing every which direction.
He had double double hand surgery. Poor guy.
So they still impugn Roger. He's been bringing it for how many, like a year and a half now? I love hearing him on the radio. He's always well prepared.
See?
My one fan again.
People love you, Roger. All right.
Come on, Roger. That was two different callers.
You want to talk a few minutes of Mariners? I know you were excited to talk about Mariners since you were coming in. They get back tonight. Brock asked me this question. I'll throw it over to you. When first pitch comes tonight at 7:10 here on 710 ESPN Seattle, when you're listening to Wade LeBlanc take on big game James Shields and the Chicago White Sox, what's your gut going to be? Is it going to be nervous excitement? Is it going to be confident? Is it going to be dread? Where are you at when this thing gets going for the second half tonight?
A little nervous because of how they ended the first half.
Mm-hmm.
They got the right team coming in. I mean, Chicago is horrible. And so it is a good get-well team. You want them to just get back to where they're confident. To where, you know, that was part of the lure of the team. It wasn't that how we felt about them is when you looked in their eyes when they were playing, they felt it. And you don't know if they've lost. I don't think they've lost that. You know, they just need to have a nice soft landing. Chicago's a nice soft landing.
You know, the Garage said yesterday that this will be Felix's biggest start of his career. And he made a case, and I was sitting there listening to that, and it's going to be Wade tonight. It's going to be Felix tomorrow. If this team falls tonight and they lose game number one, and then it's 9 of 12, and oh my gosh, this was supposed to be a safe landing spot, and it was supposed to be the terrible White Sox, the ball is going to be handed to Felix come Saturday night. And to Graz's point, it was, hey, he's the one guy. If you are going to trade for a starter when Paxton comes back here in a couple days off the DL, and we're all expecting that to happen, there's not been a setback or we've not heard anything, he's the one guy you look at. You're not taking Marco out. You're not taking Leak out. You're not taking Paxton out. You're certainly not taking Wade out. He gets the ball to begin the second half. And if Felix comes out and gives up 5 or 6 runs to the White Sox, how much more run and belief and trust is he going to have with this organization? Right, an organization that has treated him a little bit differently. Mel has been much more blunt and honest. Jerry and Scott have, for that matter, as well. You know, and you start to spin some of the storylines for this weekend ahead. It is pretty fascinating and an awfully big start for Felix tomorrow.
Man, I tell you, if Felix comes out and gets bombed tomorrow night, that will be a mess. I don't think anybody wants to deal with that. Remember, he did pitch against the White Sox earlier this year, pitched well against them in Chicago.
Yep.
Went six innings, gave up only three earned runs. He got the win in that game. Like, that was actually one of his better early games this year. So, I mean, he's going against the right team. He's doing it in the right building. If Felix comes back after a long, you know, stint of rest and gets bombed again, I think people are going to be awfully, awfully upset.
You having any fun?
And for good reason.
You having any fun?
I'm having fun here.
Are you having
Roger's
some fun?
Roger's a lot more nervous than he thought he was going to be.
Yeah.
A little more. That's
Kyle,
right.
How confident was Roger coming into this thing? What would you say confidence level coming in?
8 to 9. 8 to 9, probably.
I mean, he tried to dictate musical accompaniment. I would say that's a 10.
What was his email? He had all three songs he wanted for all three bumpers and everything. And then, like most rookies, Roger, get in the league, the first at bat, they're like, man, this thing moves a little bit faster.
A little faster than you think.
The light's a little brighter.
Text messages love it, though. Roger's the dude. Keep him around. Time for Roger to moonlight as a radio host. We can finally say, see you, Saul. All right. You know,
every time. That when Greg Bishop's in here, Greg Bishop, see you later, Saul.
Why is everything see you later, Saul? Roger came on and didn't say anything for 10 seconds. He had a heart attack.
That's the alternative people are looking for.
So I'm so bad at this. Let me just be clear. I just want to make sure I fully understand. I'm so objectionable. I'm so awful. I'm such a bad radio host. You'd rather have dead air. You'd rather have Brock talk, have 10 seconds of dead air, and then have Brock speak again?
Be careful.
I am very calm.
You don't want the answer to, Mike.
I don't think I do want the answer to that. Is Mike Zunino back tonight, Howdy?
I don't think tonight, but I think soon.
I thought he was coming off on the DL. I thought the DL stint was going to end when the All-Star break did.
I think it's close to that time.
Okay.
Because
I was told, I thought it was supposed to be today.
I'm hoping it is.
I'm thinking maybe tomorrow.
Which catcher are you sending down?
Who are they going to send down?
Yeah.
Probably Freitas.
Okay.
Yeah, Herman can run a little bit.
He's got a hot bat for a minute.
Yeah. Herman can run a little bit. That throat got a little dry.
He can run a little bit. That is an interesting thing about him.
Yes, it is. What's the responses on the text toy?
The responses? I don't want to read any of the responses. Why you got to go right to the text toy? You're not in charge of deciding when we go to the text toy. That's my job.
That is true.
Roger equals better than Saul. I prefer dead air. Roger's contributed more in the last 20 minutes than Jim Moore has in like a year. Roger's just fresh water. I can't wait for 7:10 in the morning with Brock and Rog. All right. Roger, as usual, everyone comes in, and I just set the bar low so that you guys can just
fresh water.
Thank you, Curtis. We appreciate that. It wasn't dead air. He just stumbled, and that's fine. That's dead air equals better than Salk. All right. You know, you guys are a bunch of jerks. It is Friday. It is the summertime. I'm looking forward to my weekend, not thinking about you people out there saying mean things to me. I'm very sensitive. I don't like it.
Well, I know this. Roger's going to be very comfortable in our next segment.
Yes.
You know, when it comes to intriguing players, comes to spitting it ahead, this has been a lot of fun over the last week. And, man, what are we getting down to? Number five?
Five.
Number five on our most intriguing Seahawk list.
All right. So we're going to get to number five here in a moment. And I'll say this about the number five guy, and I don't know if it gives it away. I don't think he's the most important player who needs to step up his game for the Seahawks this year. But if he does, it might be the most awesome. That's next. I'm Brock and Salk with Roger. That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
At 5:10, a home appraiser, once quoted by Pete Carroll, Brock and Salk's best caller from Tacoma.
Oh, my God.
There he is, Roger in Tacoma, T-Town, representing today. Roger's in with us, hanging out this hour. We'll do Answer the Question Jerk with him, which is fun, coming up in 15 minutes. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. If you got something you want to lay on us, question, anything, whatever it is. This hour is brought to you by Tackle, T-A-K-L. Text, of course, pouring in. Love this new show, Brock and Roger, but the guest, Salk, has been very annoying. Well, that may continue. Every day at 9:30 as we get ready for training camp, which is now just what? Less than a week away, week from yesterday, Seahawks will open up their training camp. We get ready by counting down the most intriguing Seahawks, and today that leads us to
number five.
Running back, Chris Carson. Head turner. Every one of us that went out there, and especially you, Salk, and Kyle, and Lydia, the first day out there at OTAs when it was open to the public, the biggest head turner on the field was Chris Carson. They say it all the time in college football, the biggest jump you're going to make is from your freshman to your sophomore year. If you are going to make a jump professionally, and many times you've already hit your physical limits, especially if you play big-time college football and in a Power 5 conference with the diet, nutrition, the weight room, and everything else, many times you've already hit your physical limit. Chris Carson had not. Chris Carson bounced around the collegiate ranks. Originally to Georgia, then a junior college, then Oklahoma State, you know, different systems, different places. Not a real commitment to his body and to his diet like he certainly has made over last few months.
100% all in committed. He's the most ripped person in the world.
When you all get out and you all that are going to head out to the berm next week and watch training camp, and those of you that are fortunate to get out there early and watch them, the two guys that will be the biggest game changers who have developed the most are Ethan Posick and Chris Carson. Ethan Posick's a guard, Roger, and guards are very hard to differentiate and tell what they're doing in practice, running backs or not. He's bigger, he's stronger, he's faster, and you add that mix to some of the highlights he showed last year when he started week one and beat out the rest. Now that is a pretty promising prospect.
Carson has a big hole right side, turns upfield 40, cuts back inside midfield, drags two defenders into San Francisco territory. Now that's a tired San Francisco defense, and they're trying to tackle a battering ram wearing number 32. A 16-yard pickup by Chris Carson.
The Seahawks don't need Chris Carson to be good in order to be good this year. They can be good even if he doesn't take the leap and turn into a significantly better player than he was last year. They can still be good.
Because of Rashad Penny.
They drafted Rashad Penny. They've got, I mean, even C.J. Procise, I know we sort of laugh and make fun, but C.J. Procise, if healthy, and I know that never happens, is a really good quality running back.
And Mike Davis flashed, and he's back on the roster, too.
They will be okay if Chris Carson isn't great. But you know what would be really fun? Is if he is. That's why he's so intriguing. They don't necessarily need him, but if he is the one that pops, that dude is a blast to watch. A seventh-round pick who turns himself into a superstar running back? That would be an awesome story, and you add Rashad Penny to the mix and the two of them going back and forth. Yeah, all right, maybe you'd at that point be a little bit bummed that you used your first-round pick on a running back, but so what?
Yeah.
You would have a superstar, and I he's such a fun dude to watch. He has remade his body. He is the one guy that stands out probably more than any other. I would be so excited to see that guy.
We've seen running backs flash in preseason. You've seen that around here. It was a little kid from Alabama that made the team that everybody fell in love with and couldn't believe when they cut him. And, they got him back from the Jets.
What's his name? Scooter or something? What was that guy's name?
Chris DeMichael looked awfully good in the preseason.
What was that guy's name who everybody was in love with?
Who brought just nothing.
Troy Maine Pope.
Scooter. That's what I call him.
Yeah.
Scooter Pope.
We've seen running backs flash in the preseason. Chris Carson did more than just that. He flashed in OTAs and minicamp last year. He flashed in the preseason.
You know what, though? Most of the guys who flashed here have turned out to be pretty good. Like Spencer Ware flashed. He turned out to be a really good running back for the Chiefs. Yeah. Who's the dude who ended up going? Rod Smith flashed a little bit. He's still been in the league.
He's made a career. And those guys have been good. They've not been great. Chris Carson flashed. He came into the first few weeks of that season last year. He flashed even more. That horrific O-line at points that he had to play behind with Reese Odiyama and all the rest. It was just like he's getting tackled five. Oh, he broke that tackle. Oh, that's a one-yard gain. That's the best one-yard gain you're ever going to see time and time and time again.
True.
Did a little bit more than that, and I think that's why there's excitement. But he also isn't scared. He's also a guy, then we asked him what it was like, you know, on draft day to see this team trade down and actually take someone in the first round. And who did they take? They took a running back. Chris Carson's not scared.
I didn't know they was going to take a running back in the first round, but at the same time, I know it was a need. You know, a lot of us got hurt last year, so I knew it was a need. So I knew they was going to take a running back. But when I did, I mean, I looked at it like I did last year. You know, they had Thomas Rawls, Eddie Lacy, everybody got to come in and compete. So, me and Rashad are real cool, so, you know, I'm helping them out and everything like that.
You're right, Mike. If he and Rashad are
awesome, like if they are a dynamic running back duo, how sweet will that make this year? It'll be
how
so much
fun. Is
you won't be talking about 2-4 wins. You'll be talking about 8-10-12 if they are able to dominate the running game the way you really hope that they can. Roger, what do you make of Chris Carson?
What you like about him most is that he gets upfield fast. Mm-hmm. Not a whole lot of dancing. He can catch it, but he gets upfield and he creates the contact.
And wait till you see him. And wait till you see him, Roger. You saw him last year, about 220 or so.
Ripped out of his mind.
I mean, it's a legitimate, oh my gosh. He legitimately, we hear this about everybody, best shape of his life. He's gained this. Felix looks great. No. He legitimately changed his body, and competition seems to do that.
You like Penny?
You know, I had heard of him when we drafted him, and as soon as we drafted him, first of all, it was a shock that I actually heard of a Seahawks player that they drafted.
True.
And then, and I knew he was one of the top running backs. So what I immediately pulled up his highlights on my phone, and jaw drop. I mean,
do you love him?
I like him a lot. I mean, well, they showed. I think what I liked about him most was they showed him catching a 25-yard seam route right down the middle of the field.
Yes.
In stride, walked in the
end. Rawls ain't doing that. That's Lacy one of ain't like, doing that. And a bunch of the guys they've had, Mike Davis isn't doing that.
Might be one of the three passes that his team threw last year.
And ProSize Carson and Penny can all do that. That's why it's also very intriguing. The new system is intriguing. Can they stay healthy, the three of those guys, and especially ProSize and Carson, can they stay healthy for the first time in their football careers? Very, very intriguing.
As number five on our list, Chris Carson, number five. We'll have the top four leading up to Thursday when we are out at training camp for the first time. Get to see the Seahawks team and the way they've been built. Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle. We're answering questions here in a couple minutes. Roger in Tacoma, one of our great callers, on with us. He's in studio hanging out. Now, Roger was number one when the big board started. He's now at number two. And the guy who's at number one is here on the line.
Oh, shocker.
Kendall in Santa Monica.
What?
What's up, Kendall? Good morning.
Hey, gentlemen.
You're on with Roger.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Hi, Roger.
To you.
How are you?
What up, Kendall?
I'm just getting hyped for the Seahawks. One week out of training camp.
Are you wondering when your invite's coming to the studio? Is that why you're calling?
No. I'm just doing my thing, just trying to help you guys do a good program.
Look at that, the selfish nature.
I hate to cut you off here, Kendall, but we actually got some breaking news, and so I'm going to deal with that for just a moment.
Oh,
thanks for
really?
The phone call, and sorry we can't keep goofing around. But the Mariners just announced a moment ago, Scott Servais has agreed to terms on a multi-year contract extension. Probably not a huge surprise. We knew this would be coming. We've known it for a while. It became especially true after Jerry DePoto got his deal done. But Scott Servais signs a multi-year contract extension with the Mariners. If I had to guess, this got worked on over the last couple of weeks. They weren't going to do this while they were on the road. You're not going to do this during the All-Star break. You want to give Servais his day in the sun. You want to give the reporters, everybody local, an opportunity to talk to him, just as they did with Jerry DePoto. So this gets done. Scott Servais will be in the mix here now. Multiple years for him and for Jerry DePoto. Both guys rewarded for the great job they've done, not just this year, but in the 2.5 years leading up to it.
Yeah, that's the beauty of an extension. It's what you've done in the past, but equally important is what you're projecting in the future.
Yeah.
And for Jerry DePoto, it is rebuilding a core and some of these core players. And for Scott Servais, my gosh, where do you want to start on the list? Of players that he's built up, that he's developed, that those thought that this is a bonehead deal, this is a bad move, this guy can't play, even a history of not playing well, and you turn around Mike Zunino, you build up Marco Gonzalez, Mitch Haniger is flourishing. Yeah, this was, I think, a given once Jerry was going to be done, that this would be inevitable, but congratulations.
As I was saying, these are no-brainers, man. I mean, managers and general managers don't make enough for this to factor into your long-term plans. If a year or two you decide that they're still not going in the right direction, you move on. I mean, so what? So you're paying them a couple. That's not enough money in the grand scheme of things for a baseball organization. It's just your manager and GM.
Yeah, but you know what doesn't happen in baseball an awful lot? Guys drinking wine together 20 years ago Tucson,
right.
Spinning databases and trying to figure out what they were going to do. And 20 years later, they get a chance to do it. They do it together. They're on the same page together. And for that reason, in the period of 2 weeks, they're both extended.
I think it's
together.
Really good news. I'm excited about it. I thought Scott.
Yes!
I'm not
so
that excited about it. I mean, that's a little too. Excited about
That's
it.
That's great news. Congratulations.
Let me
read you some of the quotes. Scott, this is from Jerry DePoto. Scott's created a culture here in Seattle that allows players to be successful. They are encouraged to be themselves, which has resulted in a loose environment while still maintaining the focus on the team above self. His leadership has also been evident through the ongoing growth and impact of one of the best coaching staffs in Major League Baseball. He's been the right leader at the right time for the right team, and I look forward to many more years together. Quote from Servais says, "Feel fortunate to be given the opportunity to continue to work with an amazing group of players and staff. Our front office is extremely active and very supportive as we work toward bringing a World Series title to a very deserving and passionate fan base." So there you go. That's Scott Servais getting his deal done. I think that's awesome, man. I'm really happy. This is something I've wanted for a while. I think Scott is underrated as an in-game manager. I think he's good. Maybe he's not the best. He's not Tony La Russa in his prime or whatever, but I think Scott does a reasonably good job with the in-game moves, handles his bullpen pretty darn well, and more than anything has changed and flipped the culture here in Seattle, which is going to be tested here in these next couple of weeks.
Sure.
Roger and Tacoma's in. We're going to answer your question. 710, powered by Coors Light. We will do it on any subject next. I'm Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
All right, if you're just tuning in, news just a couple minutes ago breaking. Scott's service has been extended by the Mariners, a multi-year deal. He will be on today with Danny Dave and Moore, scheduled guest out at Edgar's Cantina. So if you want to hear from and or maybe even see Scott, get down to Edgar's Cantina at the ballpark. Danny Dave and Moore out there before Friday Mariners games, and they will talk to Scott.
You see the terms of the deal?
I've not.
Jimbo Fisher, 10 years, $75
million. Wow, $75 million. Wow, that's really impressive.
So that's not true at all. That's a blatant lie by me.
$75 million.
I think you would take that deal, right?
Let's see. There's going to be a news conference today at 12:30. And then Scott Service on with Danny David Moore this afternoon. Should be awesome. Very cool. Let's see. Roger in Tacoma is in with us, hanging out. So today he's Roger in studio. What's up, Roger?
What's up, dude?
You having fun?
I'm having fun.
Bright lights, big city.
Roger. Great experience.
You get up here much?
A little bit with my work. Yeah. Not much. Most of my work's down south.
The maddest you ever got, Salk and I, when you listening down in T-Town to us, and we said something just so dumb, we get into some conversation, you're like, I'm so mad, I'm not even going to call her. This is so stupid, they should not ever talk about this again.
Well, I don't have a mad call, but I have an embarrassing one for each of you.
Okay.
Of course, Salk's was this wonderfully awkward conversation with Bobby Wagner.
That was awkward, and it didn't need to be. Although, I will say, if you were in the room with us, it was not nearly as awkward in the room.
It wasn't.
Honestly, and I'm not just defending myself. If you were in the room, it was not nearly that awkward.
I would agree with
Bobby had a smile. We were both laughing. Honestly was okay in the room, but I've heard it, and it sounds
awful. Is that to say that Earl can now put his name back in his mouth?
Why is it I've heard it? Oh, I don't know, because Lydia plays it every darn day.
Well, out in Radioland, it was quite awkward.
Bobby, how dare you? Go outside and go hit somebody.
All right, am I in?
You didn't know what an Aggie was?
Oh, that's right.
You didn't know what an Aggie was.
I knew it was an agricultural school.
No, you didn't know what an Aggie was.
I knew what it was.
No, I don't think you did.
But you didn't know why they were called the Aggies.
I didn't know that's where the "ah" came from. And that's why I just called them A&M.
Because what, you're calling them the Aggies or something?
Yeah, I called them the Aggies. Oh gosh, they hate me.
Well, when you live on the radio, your mistakes
true.
Are transmitted throughout the world.
Is that true?
Very true.
That's why we just learn to embrace them. Yes.
That is read what others are saying and join the conversation. That's what hashtag longbody, I think.
Wow, that's the other one.
Yeah, I think so.
That's one of my favorites. Brock defines hashtag. All right, let's see what's in from the people. Question for Roger. Would you rather have your feet in the sand in Hawaii or go backpacking around Europe?
Very easy. Me and my wife's honeymoon was in Hawaii. We go back there about every other year. We stay on Waikiki.
Nice. Yep.
Hawaii is the most beautiful place on earth.
It's awesome.
It's paradise. It smells great. The water's great. The spirit of the people are great.
What about the exchange rate?
Doesn't matter.
It's the best part.
There is no exchange rate. American dollars. They speak English. Hawaii is
Hawaii is awesome.
It still feels like you're getting crushed on the exchange.
It does, I know.
This drink was $10? Man.
$10?
U.S. dollar ain't what it used to be.
Man, when I went to Maui last year, everybody was like, oh, you got to go to Mama's. You got to go to Mama's Fish House. I was like, okay, we'll go to Mama's. Sir, would you like a drink? Yeah, all right, I'll take a drink. How much? It's $18.50. Like, $18.50? How can that be the price of a drink?
Isn't that what, like, Vegas is like, though?
No, Vegas, the drinks are free.
Oh, depending on where
you're...
Well, for the
rollers.
Well, for anybody.
$10 Bud Lights at XS.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Not for everybody. It's not just free drinks for everybody.
Free drinks if you're playing a gambling. What do you mean?
I don't think it was for me.
What do you mean?
Huh?
If you sit down at a table, it's free.
I don't think so. I don't think that's true.
It is true.
Not been my experience.
Your experience is wrong.
Okay.
In Vegas.
Yes.
You're telling me you went to Vegas, you sat at a table playing gambling, and then you got a drink and they made you pay for it.
Yes. That's 100%
happened.
That drink should cost you a $1 chip.
Yes.
It's just a tip.
100% happened.
I think that's in New Vegas.
Yeah.
They do charge you for stuff.
Yes.
That is the stupidest thing I've ever
that's
heard.
That's not true. Well, that didn't happen.
It did happen.
Something else happened. Then you're confusing
the story.
It's
a very inane comment.
Okay.
It didn't happen. It just didn't.
Next question.
Jerks. Now, this blows my mind. Is cereal a soup?
Whoa.
This is mind-blowing when I read it a few minutes ago.
I mean, you definitely can have a cold soup. You can have your gazpachos, but I don't think so, no.
It's like an al dente soup. It's a little crunchy.
Yeah,
very al
sure.
dente. Unless you let it sit too long. Then it's soggy soup.
It would definitely be a dairy-based soup. I don't know.
It is not a soup.
This is a whole bag. Does this go to back to, like, is a hot dog a sandwich kind of conversation? You're breaking down the elements.
I'm not buying it as a soup. Nope.
No, not buying it.
Me and Roger. Nope.
No, me neither. But I'm at least willing to consider it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question.
Good question. All right, Jerks, what's your favorite garden tool?
Garden tool?
Yeah, what's your favorite garden tool?
That's easy for me. None of them. One of my favorite pastimes is watching my wonderful wife, Carolyn, who's listening. Garden.
She's good at that.
Oh, she likes it.
She loves it. It's relaxing to her. She actually is smiling when she's doing it. She's wearing a funny hat. You know, she embraces it.
And you just watch.
I do. And actually,
you mow?
I pay my mower. In fact, that would probably be the last bill that I would forfeit.
Yes.
You know, if I'm trimming back my budget,
the mower is the
he
one
stays.
Thing you gotta keep.
Oh, he stays.
You have somebody who cleans your house at all?
No.
So you're willing to clean the house,
scrub,
and get into the toilets before mowing?
Absolutely.
I'm exactly the opposite.
It's kind of weird. My wife's out working in the yard, and I'm inside cleaning the house. Kind of a little role.
You ever used a pick? Saul, you ever used a pick?
A pick?
Yeah.
Which kind of pick?
Out in the garden, the big thing, the big hand, almost like a sledgehammer. But
no,
it's got the
edge. I haven't needed to use that, no.
Oh, it's nice.
I used a...
It's kind of like going to the dump. You just get to throw your stuff in the dump.
A little mini three-finger rake? What would you call that?
Trowel?
Is that a trowel? Well, yeah. I thought a trowel was like more solid. It can have three fingers like that. No. It's like three prongs.
Yeah, huh.
That's still
about.
A trowel?
Don't know.
I don't know. That's a good
one. I don't think it's a trowel at all. A trowel is flat, more like a shovel.
So you like using the three finger?
A three finger rake.
Okay.
That's my favorite garden tool. Yeah. When I planted some new grass this year in my yard, that's what I used.
It's called a hand rake or a cultivator.
There you go.
A cultivator. I felt like that's what I was doing, cultivating. Cultivating dirt.
It's kind of what we did today with Roger. We
cultivated
further relationship.
Absolutely.
You know what was the best part about having Roger in?
What was?
No joke. By far, the best part about having Roger in is Wally was here. Howdy basically didn't say anything.
That's true.
Like, Howdy knows there's only room for so many voices on the show at once. And if Roger's here, then Howdy shuts up.
Howdy's my boy, though.
You're my boy, Roger.
There you go.
Mike, we come in here Monday morning. Roger,
don't even ask me. I'm not prepared.
Okay, we're not going to talk about that. Win the series.
Go beat the living tar out of Chicago White Sox.
Absolutely.
Does that be too much to ask? And when you know what else I want to be talking about on Monday?
Huh.
I want to talk about my man, who right now is three under, three shots off the lead. Jordan Spieth on fire, baby!
What?
Let's talk about that Monday morning. We'll see you guys then. Roger, thank you. It's great to have you in.
Thank you very much for having me.
Until Monday morning, 7 a.m. The Hay. See you, everybody.
Barn.
Hey, in T-Town, we don't rest on our laurels. We laurel on our laurels. All right, I'm out.
Well done, Roger. It's an honor to follow him, actually.
Case of the chopper!